Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, travelers, to the Lucky Die. Previously, Lafian reconnects with an old friend, Ra teaches a new artistic technique, Squash Fonts living longer than a typical halfling, as Ultana takes a bath. Hanging out with Talus' mum, Ra finds a fellow artist to talk to about sculpting, while Ultana spends time bonding with Electo, playing fetch with a bearhead. When they meet up with Talvin, although we're taken aback by the sudden appearance, he agrees to guide the group through Cicero to the Elysium stage. What pathways would each of our heroes see if they came to Cicero alone? Would Demi be annoyed by her dress being used as a patch? And what awaits them upon the stage? I guess you're about to find out. Welcome back to the Lucky Die.
With Talvin walking his way along the shore, you see before you a pathway in the woods.
Is there a dirty yellow brick road?
No. It is not paved.
A dirty off-white.
Off-white, yeah. No, it is just a dirt path leading through the woods. Stoneless. Just dirt. It doesn't take particularly long. Maybe 10, 15 minutes of walking. Nothing but trees around you. Ahead of you, you see a clearing. And you see a small collection of buildings. But they are completely dwarfed by this massive three-story building. There are many columns that appear to have been carved, and they're holding up this... not exactly flat roof, it's one of those like artsy angled type roofs. And you can see that the building is constructed of different coloured marbles, pinks and blacks and blues. And it's a massive building. You can see that there are, glimpsing through the various kind of windows or holes or archways in the walls, that you can see steps or seats, maybe. This is what you get when you arrive here.
All right. I guess we should look for whoever's in charge here. I'm turning on my leadership aura, our focus, by the way.
Good. Smart move.
Okay. I can go see if we can find somebody. And Raw will wander up to the building.
Let's stick together, okay. Shall we?
Okay, well, come on then. I mean,
we're going.
No.
You pass through these smaller buildings that lead up to this kind of like steps that are outside of the building. And you hear movement and rustling of people inside. You see faces peering at you from the window, and they just seem to magnetically lock on you and just slowly turn and watch as you make your way inside. Before you, you see a large open area with a stage. The stage is tall, grand. There are many wings. There are many boards that are put up, ready to be slid into place to denote different scenes. You can see that there are amplification things that bounce off light to land in the perfect place, spotlights, if you will. You can see there are many, many, many rows of chairs that are on an incline, a rake. And the ground, the flat area itself, is covered in rows and rows of chairs. The chairs are like this dark mahogany colour. The cushions themselves are very well made in this kind of like dark red velvet colour. The floor itself is a mixture of dark and light wood, creating kind of squares and checkered patterns on the ground. Up on the stage, there are two figures. One of them is sitting on what looks like a prop throne. And you can see the figure is, she has her legs over one arm, she's leaning back, and you can see that she has this very ornate looking crown upon her head. She's wearing these robes that are very brightly coloured, and you can see that she's holding a scepter in her hand, but the scepter is definitely a prop, even from this distance. There is a person sitting next to her in the other chair, regal, paying attention. He has a long goatee, and he's wearing also robes, and he seems to be holding scrolls and reading. He doesn't have a crown upon his head. What do you want to do?
Approach slowly?
They called it the Electrium Stage.
Elysium.
Elysium Stage. And Talwin told us to expect performances. Do you think that these people communicate in art?
Well, in that case, then let's get some front row seats, shall we?
All right. I'm going to let Lafayette lead this.
Unless there's a box seat specifically reserved for us.
Oh, there would be boxes. Whether they're reserved for you, whether you can get access to them, you would have to explore the theater.
Let's get front row seats. Those are the best ones. I want the performers to sweat on me.
That is... disgust. Is that... No, I don't think I've been to theater a lot. I went to like a ballet once with Odette. That was pretty nice, but they didn't sweat on us. Is that usual?
Sounds like you've been going to those like hoity-toity high-class theaters. If they're not sweating on you, they're sanitized. I tells you.
It weren't no hoity-toity theater. It was in a park or some shit.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. You got ripped off.
The four of you make your way to the front seats. As the four of you take your seat at the front of the stage, you have to crick your neck up a little bit to see what is happening.
Front seats are the worst, never get them.
So you've cricked your neck up just a little bit. And you see the lady who is covered in brightly different colored robes. She kind of like stands up and she kind of like opens her arms and looks down at the four of you. She says,
"Welcome to my theater. What can I be doing for you? There is no performance or talk or directions given today."
And she kind of like steps forward and looks down at the four of you.
"We were seeking to speak with whoever might be in charge of the armies of Cicero. We were told to come here."
"And who do you think that you are, that this leader of ours would even think of talking to you?"
"We are, I guess the best word I can use would be champions of the material realm. We're trying to save the world from the blissful eclipse, which I'm sure you're well aware of."
"Yeah, they were."
"We wish to ask for aid in the upcoming battle. This is going to be a fight that will determine the fate of not just the material realm, but all realms."
"What do you know of our armies?"
And she kind of sits on the side of the stage, and you can see the guy that is like still sitting up on the throne just give her a glance and shake his head and continue reading through his scrolls.
"Very little, to be honest with you."
"And yet you come seeking the aid, the leader, without having any idea at all on what we are. That does not seem very smart to me. You could be getting a bum deal and risking everything here in Cicero. You're but mortal here."
"We know that you fight to close the gates."
"We do."
"And we know that you are aggressive towards mortals on the mortal plane."
She kind of like, you see her bite her bottom lip a little bit. She looks down and for a moment she looks just sad. And then she suddenly perks up again. She says,
"But that is what happens when celestials, they go onto the physical plane ahead of when we should be called. Without the call, everything gets lost. They think everything they see is an enemy. Mortals, demons, the same."
"Wait, so the celestials don't mean to attack us?"
"No. If they fall through a rend in the air, which I believe you have all seen at this point, and you," and she points at Squash, "you have seen definitely twice.
Yeah.
When they fall through these or they step through from the passing portal without the proper call to action, they just go into battle mode."
"We need them to be ready for proper battle. One that's going to decide the fate of all. And yes, we..."
"And if I decide to tell our leader of your request for an audience, why are you different from anybody else? Why is this apocalypse the one that we should be called for?"
"This one was..."
"There have been many apocalypses and the mortal plane has managed to defend them, but this one is special, yes? This one really is the end of the world." "Convince me."
"This one was ordained by the gods themselves."
"I can tell you one thing that I don't believe has ever been a problem before. I don't know what the sentinels call it. The curtain, the web, the net. The thing that keeps all of us in and keeps everything outside out. It's broken. And we're not facing a threat by anything from within. We're facing a threat from without. There's something out there. And it doesn't think like us, any of us. You at least know anger and calm. You at least know off greed and love. But they don't know any of it. They just know that nothing, and they believe it's superior. I think it's different because it's not one of us, and it's not one of you. It's something else."
"Mm. You can see that she kind of like, she puts her hands on the side of the stage and she leans back and like crosses her ankles and like does that thing where she's kind of literally just pivoting on her hands. And she snaps forward and jumps down in front of the four of you.
Okay. Say I was to let our commander-in-chief know that the four of you wish to have an audience to make your case as to why this is truly the apocalypse and not something you could just fight on your own. If I were to do that, which one of you?
Which one of us what?
Which one of you would bear the mark for the ghoul?
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, surely one of you must be calling us. You do not want to call us now, do you?
Correct.
Or do you wish to just do this now? I mean, we could fight an enemy that is not here. One of you, if we had to track you properly across all of the plains, which one of you bears the mark?
Are you able to pass the mark to someone who's not currently present?
No.
Fuck.
What?
Not going to happen.
What is the mark? What is it?
Is it like Splint Spectre's mark?
A little bit. You have a mark of your own. And she kind of like points in like Rao's area, kind of like on the back of his neck where his kind of like soul mark is. But you could bear another. It is, consider it like a tattoo that you can get rid of just by, you know, mentioning it.
Okay, I'll wear it.
Okay. Let me speak to her. Let me persuade her to talk to you. But I warn you, she is a tricky one. And she is very much one for performance and storytelling. If you are going to be the one to bear this mark, if you are going to be the one who is to lead all of us in this great battle, you must put on a show, a tale, a performance, something, be it a beautiful reenactment. It could be song, it could be dance, it could be battles. Tell her the tale you have told me. Show her how passionate you are and why it is you who will bear the mark.
Oh, Laffian, maybe if it's the person who was to lead us, you're kind of the leader here. Maybe you should do the mark.
I mean, it sounds like we're all going to need them. We kind of need to get the other armies too, you know?
Oh, you are talking about Bellum! And she turns around and jumps back on the stage with, like, barely, like, touching anything.
Well, you cannot bear the mark of a celestial and of a demon. Choose wisely. Whatever you decide. If she will hear you. If she will find what I tell her interesting. She may be here this evening in the box.
And she points up to like the highest box on this one side of the stage.
Show her.
Laffian.
Yes.
I believe that you are probably the one who identifies with the ideals of Cicero the most out of all of us.
Are you good at dancing?
He's like a noble and shit. They're supposed to learn how to dance from like a young age so they can be ready for court, right?
I heard all of them know the waltz, right?
She takes like a couple of steps forward and she has her arms out and she takes a couple of steps forward as you mentioned like dance and she's balancing on the very tips of her toes and she spins in a circle, throws her arms out, she says,
whether you have a leading person, remember, there are supporting players and there is no such thing as a small role. You may support whomever you wish to put forward for the mark of the call. Please. You are not alone when you do this. Unless, of course, you just want a monologue. But frankly, I think she would find that rather boring. Come.
And she kind of like tipsy toes her way forward and then she just kind of like rolls and she leaves stage left.
Follow.
I had to think about it for a second. It's been a while since I did theater.
If it's like a dancing thing, like maybe I could do it and help out. And then you guys could get the marker or however.
It depends on how you translate what was just said. It sounds like we need to put on a performance, but that doesn't mean it needs to be a dance. She just said that the best way to do it would be to express our tale.
Mm-hmm.
What better way to do that, I would think, than perhaps with a little bit of...
tail. And Roll slaps his tail at something.
Not that kind of tail.
I have a +8 in performance.
Yes, Roll.
Jesus Christ. Roll was made for the big stage.
If you want me to put it that way. I'm just letting you know I can help. But yeah, let me know.
Squash, are you any skill at illusions?
Not good at pretty much anything, no.
Okay, that's some fucking crack. You want to know why? You're really good at stealthy shit, which means you're really light on your feet, which means that you would be a really fucking good dancer, okay? All we have to do is teach you a couple basic dance steps, and you'd be freaking amazing at it because you're so light on your feet.
I think you're all getting very hung up on the dance part when that's not all that performances are.
I know, but I'm just saying, he says he's not going to be good at anything. I'm just saying he's really light on his feet. He'd be a really good dancer. I am really good at battle, so I...
Different dancing.
...can do that, or I could do a show of strength. Oh my God, I'm going to lift something. What's really heavy around here? I'm going to lift something above my head.
The gentleman on the stage kind of like,
we have props in the back that could appear exceptionally heavy if you wish.
Okay. No, I think you're misunderstanding me.
Looks forward
I don't want it to appear heavy. I want to lift something that's actually heavy.
Hmm.
Why don't you just lift the whole stage then?
Okay, listen, I'm strong, but I don't think I'm that strong. Also, I don't want to break these people's nice stage. Laughing thing.
We have a cannon in the back.
That works.
I know exactly why that cannon is there, V, and I don't approve.
Oh my God. Wait. Okay, I got an idea, guys. Guys. Okay, listen. What if I lift the cannon and then we shoot Squash out of it into the audience?
What?
Okay.
I take several issues with this. I take issue with a lot of things right now. Like in the fact that it was described that this supposed leader is full of trickery and also that they may or may not be in the box. So we might put on a performance to nobody.
So that's what we do, right? We started off by shooting... shooting Squash into the box.
Why is that the first step?
Because then we know if we have to do the rest of the performance. So you give us a thumbs up if she's in there. And then you just like, I don't know, like do a backflip out of the box or some shit.
Yeah, if we aim at the box, we could check.
Yeah. Rawls
Maybe there's
me.
Some tight ropes that we can have going.
I love everything about this, guys.
Can we just play a podcast? I hear that there's a really good one we could perform.
So we're agreed. We're shooting.
Taking initiative. I have it great.
We're shooting Squash out of a cannon. Cool.
Can that be plan B? And let's just walk in there to see what happens first. No, nobody on board with that one.
Okay. No, that's not very
exciting. I'm not on board with any of this.
Well,
I'm not saying that you're not gonna shoot me out of a cannon. I'm not saying that definitively. I'm just asking that that's not the first step of our performance. A crescendo, or maybe the marker for the health break. You know?
Oh, I see. Like that's our big finale.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Squash. I'm gonna go find some paper. I'm gonna cut it up into confetti. We shoot you out of the cannon into the box, and then you throw confetti at the lady. Big finale. Big finish.
I'm going to have an aneurysm.
Surprise! Help us.
wrote one sentence. Make them perform something.
This is why we deserve your help.
It's because you made it so vague and ambiguous. It's because it's vague.
I want to see what it is that y'all want to do to persuade this person.
Glitter bomb.
Like,
wait, Roll. Make Tio do some, like, fun aerial loops. And then Tio, put your sight in Tio and then fly by the box. And then you'll be able to see if she's there. And then if she's not there, then we just stop the whole fucking performance. What's the point? And then I just throw the cannon at Tio.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Question for the gentleman on the stage there.
He kind of closes the scrolls he's working with a bit of a snap and looks at you. He has, like, these half-moon glasses on, and he's definitely peering at you over the top of them.
I already like him. You said that there's props behind stage. Are there supporting actors that we could request the aid of if need be?
Oh, this might get chaotic.
Yes.
Okay.
It is very much the way she likes this.
I would prefer controlled chaos.
As do I. I actually prefer non-chaos. Order and structure is how it should be, but the divine put her in charge for a reason.
The show must go on, I believe is the phrase.
Indeed.
I already like
if you've ever worked backstage, utter chaos.
I love this guy. I love him.
Anyway. He stands up and his robes, like, they barely touch the floor, so they don't disturb any of the dust that is on the stage, and he kind of walks forward and he kind of, like, jumps off the side of the stage.
If all you cared about was order, you wouldn't have told us about the cannon. You're an enabler.
There's nothing fun about order. The fun is in the chaos.
I'm personally of the opinion that shooting anybody out of a cannon is probably not a good idea, let alone at the box of the person that we're questioning whether or not they're even there and trying to impress, maybe?
It could kill you both.
It would certainly be different.
Wait, could it kill them both?
No. She's not quite so easily disposed of.
I should hope not. Being that we kind of need...
So what is this story you're going to tell? Great ideas that you will have. It sounds more like a variety show than an actual presentation of something.
Thank you.
Unless, of course, that is your entire performance. She would definitely not see that coming, I have to admit.
I mean... Like, we're trying to convince this person to lend us their army. So they at least have to understand our plight. So we can't just go in there and expect them to understand interpretive dance / cannon shooting.
No.
So...
And why not?
Somebody has
That's
to
what
speak.
Interpretive means.
That's kind of... So, like, when I used to, like, make money... doing, like, drums on boxes and stuff with Emma. She would tell stories while I would do the drumming. Kind of like that. So, like, maybe someone does talking while the rest of us kind of, like, drum to that.
We have supporting actors.
Well, what do you want them to do?
Well, I'm thinking the best thing that we can do to prove our case... argue our case, I should say, would be tell the story of what we've had to deal with. We've gone through so much together. We've faced a lot of challenges. Why don't we just show that? Who better to show it than those who have lived it?
Okay, well, that's like the talking part, so.
Right. I mean, there's a little bit more to it. I'm thinking someone telling the story, narrating, one might call it. A narrator.
Okay.
While having the performance done on stage.
Very time classic tradition.
I live for the classics. Although it's a new tale to be told, considering we only just lived it.
If you desperately want, Sultana, we can end it by shooting me at the box.
Okay, listen, as long as we're shooting someone out of... There's a cannon. Look, I'm not versed... Go ahead.
I only agree to being shot out of the cannon if you're holding it above your head. Let's put it like that.
Agreed. Listen, I just need you guys to know. There's one thing I know about performance. Was my friend's name Alina? I forgot. I named her. That my fucking brain is not working.
Elise
has taught me so many things about performance, and all of them have gone in one ear and out the other, except for one thing, and it's called Chekhov's Axe. And it's named after some guy named Chekhov or something. And he used to write plays, and he'd have an axe on the stage. And if it was an axe on the stage in scene one, you always have to have that axe used by the end of the play, right? So this is going to be Zoltana's cannon. So we're having the cannon on the stage, and we got to use it by the end of the play. You know what I'm talking about, right, guy?
Always end the show with a bang.
Squash, can you do like flashy magics? And Raul does the flashy magic at you.
Doesn't matter, illusion. Not exactly. I can do this, and Squash makes a little like ball of fire in his hands using fireballs, and then he controls it with control flames. So he has like three little like will-o-wisps looking flames kind of floating around. Like.
Pyrotechnics, great. Any good show has a little bit of that at least.
Atmospheric lighting.
Yeah. I can try that.
Okay.
God, the stage manager in this, and he looks a little bit disgusted at the phrase. I can provide you with some illusions. I can provide you with some props. I can ask which of our... whom would be available at such short notice to perform however you wish. I can help you acquire what you need. You just need to tell me.
I don't suppose you're able to temporarily...
Write a script? Absolutely fucking not.
Sorry?
Write a script? Absolutely fucking not.
I don't suppose you're able to temporarily borrow a friend of ours from the material plane and then put them back after. They're a bard.
That entirely depends whom and when they are.
Laffian just turns his adult on and is like, I feel like we kind of need Elise for this.
Yeah. If we can get Elise, I'm down. I'm really into that.
Is that going to scare Elise?
Because maybe, you like, want us to like, perform.
Yeah.
If I got ripped, yeah, but this is funny. Ripped to Cicero suddenly to do something, I'd be kind of freaked out, maybe.
I don't know. I think Elise is the one person that would be like, oh, fuck yeah, let's go.
It is possible. You would have to give me an hour to find her, bring her through. I have to make sure, of course, that she's of the right time frame. We don't want to mess anything up too much. Give me a description.
Zoltana, up to
he
you.
He takes the description.
I leave the decision up
rather
to Zoltana.
Rather than dig through my effing notes. After about an hour, you see standing on the stage wearing her full belly dancer gear, carrying a lute and with Tuck at her side, who's there, I think, mostly for moral support, my moral support, Mears V. and she stands there looking fucking gloriously triumphant that this may be her one fucking thing. She got to perform Cicero, so she's there, she's in it. And she smiles to all of you and she's like, yes, of course I'm going to do this. And she kind of runs and like half jumps off the stage and puts her arms around Zoltana. Okay, so.
We have a cannon.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to hold it above my head and we're going to shoot Squash out of it.
Is that possible without hurting me?
Brawl's just in the background making that face like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't.
Too late.
Yep. Okay, so we have one very big action scene, which is Squash being shot out of a cannon. So build me the idea of what it is that we're supposed to be telling here. Because a performance without a story is nothing. So, tell me what we need to convey.
Oh, actually, I have an idea, a thought. What if, okay, hypothetically, we tell a tale of us defeating the Blissful Eclipse, of us fighting and defeating it, in which all four of us come together and have to sit one on top of the other in some sort of fusion-like appearance. And then to finally defeat the Blissful Eclipse, we have to launch Squash at the illusory cloud of darkness thing that's floating above the crowd and happens to be aimed at the box.
Four come together. Rather than shooting Squash, if you don't mind, four of you are supposed to be operating as one, then Squash should be representation of the one rather than Squash himself.
Oh.
So we still shoot Squash out of the cannon, but he's one of all of you.
Fuck. I mean, yes.
I like it.
Should we tell the story in a way that would scare them as like we struggle and then fail?
Squash splatters against the glass and then slides comedically to the ground.
There's no glass. No.
Also, okay, so what does firing Squash out of, what does firing Squash out of a cannon mean? What does it mean?
Means perhaps we're shit out of ideas.
We end on a cliffhanger. Desperation. And she does a thing where she has a hand in front of her face and like moves it to the left. Like, what if we end on a cliffhanger? I mean,
what if we don't fire you out of a cannon because it sounds dangerous, and then the cannon fires, and then the lights go out.
No, that's rubbish.
Out, and then it's just a loud noise.
Nothing without
darkness.
A little bit of danger, Raoul. You have no understanding.
Thank you for trying, Raoul.
What if we just end on a cliffhanger? I mean, if you're supposed to be getting their help, the gentleman explained a lot of what was going, mostly. If you need their help, then we end on a cliffhanger if nobody knows. It leaves the audience wanting more. We end on a bang, and she points at Sultana, which is exactly what we want. We just need to fill in. Well, most stories have a beginning, a middle, and the end, and the end for us is going to be a question mark. Nobody knows. So where's the beginning?
Prison?
Prison, right. What? Oh, wait, yes, you're in prison.
What if we fire the cannon for every god that's died?
Oh.
I still think we should, like, fire darkness out of a cannon and not Squash, but okay.
The only darkness we have here is either you or Tio.
Well, we have trickery.
Yes, there's magic.
That's fair.
I can provide some, but I'm more of a dancer than anything else. And she looks like a little bit like, oh God.
Don't.
Okay, so we start in prison. We use the cannon fire to signify God death. And then at the end, we shoot Squash out of the cannon as representation of you all. And we need a middle. What's the middle? I'm sorry, at least it's with Zoltana on this shooting Squash out of a cannon thing. Like, I refuse to let this go.
It's okay.
So glad because Zoltana is dead set on lifting this cannon above her head and firing Squash out of it now.
Would the ending be the arrival of the Blissful Eclipse and the firing of me out of the cannon be this symbolism of the one going to fight it?
Yes.
All right, so leading up to that, we need some kind of symbolism for the armies of Cicero. Yeah, the conflict of the armies of Cicero and the armies of Bellum coming to our aid, or whether they're going to come or not.
The middle should be bubbling Dacian.
It is an impressive feat.
So we bubble someone, but that's not the end, because obviously the Blissful Eclipse is still coming.
That's like the climactic middle pot. I learned from you. Mm-hmm. It's coming back. It's coming back. Chekhov's axe.
Sultana's cannon.
That's more or less
the cannon
said,
above
yes.
your head. It has to be shut by the end of the show.
Yes. Okay. I need to. IV need more paper.
Okay.
God. So we start in prison. Are we having a song and a dance number, or is it just boring story?
Well, when you put it like that.
I can do drumming and dancing and maybe at the same time. And then, but I'm really tired though because I had an acid attack. I don't know actually.
Okay. I think if you can provide a beat, we might not need to have you dancing. If we get you concentrated on the thing that you are, requires a little bit less energy, but more heart to it, like the hearting beat drum. A beating drum. That's what I meant to say. I'm fucking this up. Like a beating drum. That might be a better use for you. And then you can provide the beat that everybody follows, either in the words and the phrases they use, or when we get to climactic moments where we're fighting and putting Daechin in a bubble. And at the very end, your drumming can just cease and stop, and that's the end of the show, because the cannon will kick in.
Yeah.
Okay, prison, cannon, god, death. And we're going to have Raoul on music and drums. You keep everyone in rhythm. Okay. We have Daechin in the bubble. Okay. Four become one. How are we going to symbolize the help of Cicero in Bellum? Or is that going to be more of a, hey, we didn't get your help and now nobody knows how this ends? Or how do you want to show that?
I do kind of like that that foreboding, if this is not dealt with, then all will be up in question marks.
I can see it now. We fire the cannon, everything goes dark, the smoke clears, and then there's a single spotlight on you. And that's where you make your pitch about foreboding and the uncertainty if we don't receive help.
Sure.
Yes or no?
Yeah. No.
Okay, great.
I don't know how much detail I can really go into about the overall plan of things because some of it kind of involves...
Oh, I'm not allowed to be here.
Yeah, that...
I can help plan, but I can't be here. He said I probably wouldn't be allowed to remember much that happened, except I may possibly be... credited somewhere here in Cicero as having performed or helped perform, so I would take credit. And you can see Tuck just sitting in the corner just like, what the fuck is my life?
It was my idea. I thought we needed a little bit of help with someone that knows performing arts a little bit, so
you called the right person and I am so flattered. Okay, any other pieces of performance, art, or any other symbolism you want to work in here?
All I'm picturing now is just Daechin in a bubble, and then just like Laffian and Raoul or like Squash and Zoltana being like, put that thing back where it came from.
So help me! So help me!
That's all I can picture now.
The only dumb thing that I can suggest is the fact that I have Fireball and I also have the spell Control Fire, which allows me to make shapes and patterns into fires. If we mix that together while I'm shot out of the cannon, I can like make a giant image in the sky in the shape of a 30-foot fireball. I don't know.
If you need more fire, I do have bits of pyrokinesis. So, I mean, you've seen me throw out plenty of fire before.
That's a good point.
Okay. So we have drama and foreboding, and we have moments of happiness, I hope and assume. Okay.
And the reckless stunt.
So we need like a romantic interlude between when Raoul and Ama get reunited and when me and Odette get reunited and like, and when we should have like a giant like,
if you romantic say orgy, I'm leaving.
Interlude. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, obviously you and Kathia too.
Okay. Is that right back to material plane? I need to get, no.
We need more actors.
No, clearly it's going to be actors, but like if we want moments of happiness, those are happy moments. And okay. When Squash, we do like a happy moment for like Squash when Squash starts getting his magic. and when Squash joins the gang. That was such a beautiful day.
He stole from
fucking
you.
Fucking misty-eyed. Yeah, well, listen. I've forgiven him. She goes over and like gives like grabs Squash in like a headlock and like gives him a noogie of affection.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so we have love, and she points at Laffian. Love, and acceptance, and magic.
I need a barrel and a stool.
Right.
To beat on.
A barrel and a stool.
For the drumming, I think.
Can we have?
You can see that she clicks. Like, we need a barrel and a stool and a cannon, please.
Can we put the moment? Can we put in there a comedic moment where Raal accidentally explodes a thing, even though Laffian told him not to do it?
I swear to God.
Oh, the infamous fireball incident. Ah, Squash, we have use for your fire. Wait. You're very sneaky and hidden, so far as I know. So nobody would know that you're there when you cast this giant fireball. I love it. And she kind of like begins to like make notes again.
Maybe we don't tell him about our mistakes.
No, it's beautiful. You're 100% correct. We need comedy in here too. So we have love, magic, and explosions. Okay, let me give you a very quick breakdown of the ideas in the order. We start in prison. It's dark. It's dramatic. Nobody knows what's going on. There's a narrator talking you through this. Phrases, words at a time. The cannon goes off backstage and that symbolizes god death. Then we move on. There is a fire explosion as Raal touches something he shouldn't. A comedic moment. Ha ha ha. Then there is Dachin in a bubble. It's a moment when we can reenact a battle and it will be fantastic and glorious, and you get to reenact and say the things that you never had said out loud and just kept very loudly in your mind, Squash. And then there'll be a romantic interlude where everybody meets back up with their partners and their loved ones, and then a mission is given to you where four people will become one, and we put you together. There is a big illusion of four becoming one. Sultana lifts the cannon above her head, shoots Squash, who is symbolizing all of you at once, into the box itself. There is a huge amount of smoke and fire. The drumming stops. And as the smoke clears, there is a single spotlight upon Laffian, as she points at Laffian, where you will deliver the foreboding of what will happen if you don't join us. And end scene. And she kind of like bows in front of you guys.
Mm. And then I can do this, Hour of Reaping.
No.
Yes! You appear behind Laffian. It affects only because no one's going to be scared. Everyone's in the
They're all immune to the fear effect.
Does this sound like something you could work with?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes. This sounds like a play.
Yes. Oh. You guys, I'm so sad I won't be able to watch this.
We'll tell you all about it when we get back.
Unless it goes bad, and then we won't tell you about it.
Yeah, if it goes badly, then you're going to be glad. Then you'll probably be glad you forgot it.
Okay. But please tell me either way that I got to come here and direct something in Cicero. And she kind of does that head bobbing thing when she's looking around. Like, I will add this to the story of your life, Laffian, when we're done. Oh, it's going to be my your greatest triumph.
Oh, you've got a lot of chapters left.
Walk over and like tug on her leg, like, okay, I think it's time to go, love. Let's be gone. And Tucker like reaches over and like gives Zoltan like a big handshake, and then the two of them step back. Good luck. I'm so proud of you all. And with that, you see, like, kind of drawn to their navels, they kind of like shoo, and disappear and go back.
I hate all of this.
I love every moment of this.
This is so fucking stupid.
Guys are the freaking best. All right. If you have to expend spell slots, energy, key points, psi points, if you have to expend stuff to make this happen, you will have to expend this because you might be fighting later on. You don't know. So I need to make sure you keep a track of what it is that you're doing, folks.
We will be fighting a very confused and unenthused leader of the Ciceros.
Raal's...
Okay.
Yeah.
See,
Raal, you have your barrel, for sure.
He's going to use some key points. to do drum.
Use your key points for
drumming faster.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Just a like proper breakdown moment. Like,
yeah. He's gonna be like punching the barrel, kind of. Like his drumming is gonna be kind of resembling combat and like all of his like fighting maneuvers, just a little more rhythmical.
Okay.
So that as he gets more intense, like the drumming gets more intense. And there's
oh, it's like one of those.
It's like watching the Blue Man Group versus watching someone sit on a stool and drum. You know, a little more theater to it.
Oh, I'm picturing like those big drums that they use at like the Japanese summer festivals and stuff.
Oh, those things are rad.
He's just gonna put the barrel on the stool and then punch and kick it. But I'll use some key points to be able to do
that. Oh, maybe for the finale when we have to stop, you do like one final punch and like the barrel explodes.
Well,
that's how it gets activated. So Tana's holding it high in the air. Rowley's the only one to like be able to punch it into explosion.
We need to emphasize the boom.
So I've split the story into five. Each of you are going to be responsible for parts of it.
Oh god.
All right. The finale, I'm sorry, Arch, I think is gonna have to go to Laffian because he has to do the speech at the end. So I think you're gonna have to be responsible for this.
That's fine. I'm gonna have my focus on and be How many points do
we
I
have?
All of them.
Three?
Yep.
Yeah, you should. Everyone should have everything.
Yep.
All right. So you are in charge of the finale. We have the prison, the Firestone incident. We have Dayton in the bubble, and then we have like the romantic interlude. Who wants to take what?
I think Squash should have Dayton.
Take a second one.
What?
Agreed.
Rawl should have the explosion.
He's gonna mind illusion the explosion to be very friendly and unthreatening.
Oh, look, it wasn't as bad as everybody says it was.
Roll, I'll be over here. Don't touch anything. Okay, balance.
Casey, do you want to handle the opening, the prison part?
Yes. Yes, please.
All right. Okay, and then the love moment, everybody can handle their own. Fuck you guys. I'm not dealing with this.
I mean, that works. That no, splits disagree. It amongst all of us.
V, I think that you
I should handle this.
You do kind of play all three of the love interests. Four. Four.
Squash and Demi aren't involved. Mm. What are we talking about?
No, but V plays our Squash's magic.
Yeah, the romance.
You play your own magic. I'm the romance.
Wait, romance are you in love with your magic?
And, yeah, that's what the romance is for Squash, is Squash finding his magic.
What do you think I use Mage Hand for?
Okay, gross. Gross.
That's taking the stranger to a new level.
Wait, I thought you were in love with... Never mind. Okay, all right, I'll handle this then. All right. I will pretend to be the stage master. Not a problem.
All right. I hate to say this, but can you run through what the Dayton part was? Because I remember everybody else's thing, but my brain's fucking blinking on the Dayton part.
The bubble.
Oh, it's the fight with Dayton. It is narrating the interaction with the Blissful Eclipse and how, hey, we stopped one part, but holy shit, he's part of something bigger.
Yeah, okay.
And also, you know, you finally get to tell him to go fuck himself or whatever you
want
to do.
Suck on your halfling section.
Do what you want with it.
No. Yeah. Let's not get crude. This is a place of art and...
Vulgarity is a part of art sometimes.
Correct. It sometimes has to be.
Everybody likes a good little bit of raunchiness in their shows.
Yeah, a little bit risque. Okay.
That's where the splash sound comes from.
Okay. Assume you have access to whatever, like, illusions and props and spells that you would need to do this. So you just need to talk your way through that area, and then I will get you all to roll whatever I need you to roll. All right. You have everything set. You have rehearsed at least maybe once. Everybody knows what they're doing. I love this chaos energy.
Do we?
Yeah, you'll be fine. You've got this. You 100% have this. Uh-huh. As the four of you, plus your extras, whomever they may be, are standing backstage, you hear a stir and a bustle, and the gentleman that was helping you out walks over and he says, "It would appear that our illustrious leader
has decided to listen to your petition.
Yay.
That's good. When?
Nice.
They are waiting in the box. And you see them look around and then they say, if you wouldn't mind, just clear the stage for a moment, please. I need to speak with these four. And the extras, the actors, the props, everything just leaves. You see him move his hand in a circle, and Squash, you would recognize that he's casting some sort of kind of like, not exactly an anti-scrying spell, but like a privacy spell around the four of you, around the five of you.
All right.
And he says, I do not believe, based on her temperament, that she would be willing to give any of you the mark. However, if she were to suffer an accident, the next in line, bollocks to this, I would be more than willing to give it to whomever you wish, if you can make sure an accident happens.
Insight. Somebody. Fucking insight.
You can insight.
Yeah. I'm shit at it. That's why I'm saying somebody.
Yeah, can I... Okay. Yeah, I'm going to focus or a focus read for Aura. Why, coup? You want a coup? I need... Yeah.
This motherfucker's suggesting a coup, but he's doing it based on...
More or less chaos. If I were to do it, it wouldn't be considered honorable.
Okay.
But you would be an accident. Just an accident. There are cannons on the stage, of course.
That's a 22.
All right. I guess I will get my dice out.
This is kind of sus.
He is not telling the truth.
Oh?
On any of it. Everything. Something entirely about his manner, his aura, the way he moves, the way he's been talking. He's offering you a quick solution. That's what it would appear. But this is... He's testing you.
Laffian gives him a look and just... I don't think that a good idea at all. I, even with my shortcomings on this performance of ours, have more faith in it than anything else.
Well, if you do manage an accident, and if it were to happen, nobody would blame you. And if it doesn't happen, good luck persuading her. And he snaps his fingers and it echoes around the backstage area and many of the actors fall back in. The magic underneath him disappears. Break a leg, won't you? And he whisks his way off of the kind of away from the backstage area. All right.
Telepathically to the everybody else, Laffian just says, that was definitely a setup for something. His aura was screaming bullshit. That's it. He just lets everybody know.
All right. Casey, this is your shine. This is your time to shine.
Okay.
The curtains open. And you see in front of you a whole host of different celestial beings.
Oh, no.
You see firebirds. You see... snakes, you see winged creatures, you see things that are more akin to angels. You've met chained angels before, you know what they look like. A whole host. Not exactly filled the stands, you're not a sellout performance, don't get ahead of yourselves, but it's pretty full. You look up to the right and you see the same woman who greeted you, legs sort of like on the edge of the balcony, just looking down.
hand under her chin, watching Sultana take us through prison.
So you see an extra dressed up as a warden, and he walks onto stage from stage left. And as he walks by, a spotlight lights up Sultana in a prison uniform. And then he keeps walking, and a spotlight lights up Rawl in a prison uniform. And then he keeps walking, and a spotlight lights up Laffian in a prison uniform. And the three of us walk forward. We kind of like are miming walking behind him. And then Rawl gets jumped by some extras dressed in prison uniforms, and we help him fight them off. And then the prison warden comes back in and shackles us all together and walks us toward a makeshift gallows. And he starts giving a speech about, like, I don't know, fucking how he's a piece of shit. We say some of our iconic...
I am a piece of shit. You suck.
We say some of our iconic lines from the first episodes. the first few episodes where I don't think we have any iconic lines. And then we walk up on the stage, and an executioner walks up and puts nooses around our necks. And then the first cannon goes off and the stage goes dark. And then it lights back up. And we are in with the warden and somebody dressed as Caden, rubbing our wrists because they're free from the shackles. I obviously tell off Lindgren because, you know,
he's a dick.
And then an extra dressed as Demi comes in and talks to us about magic, and that she's going to give us, a mind link, and we start the circle. And then... we do an interpretive dance all together in the circle to symbolize forming the mind link and starting our journey. And the interpretive dance goes into, like, us going on, like, our first couple adventures together.
Like, and that is the perfect time to switch over, because that's when Rao's Firestone incident happens.
Can I do all this while drumming?
The perfect time. Yeah, you can have a stand-in for Rael. It's totally fine. You can have a stunt double.
I have a stunt double.
It's a stunt double that's just Casey? Wearing the dragon kigurumi.
They're better cosplay than we'll ever manage. Casey, I would like you to roll me a performance roll at advantage, please.
But what if I don't want to?
Beautiful. I would like you to. If you don't mind. The interpretive dance was the reason. I fucking love it.
Squash was standing by the sidelines like, oh, thank Ilmater.
Ilmater's in the crowd like, no, don't thank me.
Thanks, Sultana.
Yeah, you become aware of some, like, very celestial-related...
So
hey. Celestial-related beings.
So that was
That's
a 21,
21
that, and
you
I need
have
to
advantage.
Let you guys know, I apparently have a +4 in performance, so...
Yeah, it's charisma.
Oh, damn. You got another roll, by the way, Casey. Because it was so beautifully set out. I love it. And the interpretive dance. Like, I need you to be able to roll this at advantage in case you get a super high
I
number.
I got a 23 that time.
Hey! Okay. As we begin our proper journey through the adventures that we had after ending this beautiful interpretive dance where everybody is 100% what the fuck just happened. Rael, tell us about the Firestone.
Part that I didn't
this is
want
the moment of comedy and happiness.
yeah. The part I didn't want us to do. I got it. Okay.
You got this.
Okay. So from the stage, Rael is over doing his drumming thing. I have a stunt double. So for getting hung again and dealing with that trauma. And when it comes, the time for Raw's part of the story, someone else comes over and takes over Raw's like drum bit and just does like a little something. As Raw gets distracted, and seems to wander off, overplaying this, obviously. He's not actually distracted. And there's like bits of magical light coming up from like the floor is kind of golden, you know, and there's like streams of light seeming to come up from the wood under the floor and stuff, just as effect. And Raw's kind of wandering over towards something, and he picks something up, and then he uses his fake illusionary fire. It starts doing fire, and starts panicking, and rolling around, and flailing, and faking, being very much more terrified, you know, than he was in the moment, because he wasn't terrified. I'm not gonna say that. And and by this point, he's over next to where Laffian is on the stage, and the fire just gets on both of them, and we both kind of like play dead, and the stage goes dark. It's very dramatic.
And then he whispers to you, "You and I remember this very differently."
This was funny.
Fucking light you on
the
fire
dramatic
next time.
Interpretation of the Firestone incident. All right, Ral. Can I have you roll performance at advantage, please?
Okay. Now, what about my exhaustion?
Then you'd be rolling it straight.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure exhaustion affects your skill checks.
It's a 19.
Jesus.
No. 19. Yeah, disadvantage on mobility checks, so it was a straight roll. 19. Okay. Jesus Christ, that was beautiful. an important question. Was Laffian's like, "Hey, we remember this very differently"? Was that loud enough to be picked up by the audience?
Probably the front, like if you're like towards the front row, they probably would have heard it.
Okay. Then the laughter is definitely louder at the front. We've had a really good dramatic setup. We had good comedy moment. All right, Squash. Assume that the tale and the story has rolled forward enough that we get to having met Squash and that we are now at the Dacian moment.
All right.
Please tell me what this looks like.
So the backside of the stage has now been like, it has its own little cardboard mesh across the back, which creates like the illusion of being in a giant crater. The mesh itself has a magical fire that doesn't actually burn, but it gives off a glow that looks kind of purple greenish. In the middle of the stage, the ground of the stage itself seems like kind of covered in something, looks like some kind of muddled something. And I'm imagining some kind of thunder starts the scene. And in that moment, two extras teleport in, one being Dacian and one being like the stand-in for Elise? No, Anna, thank you.
Dana.
And we have the four of us running down the cliffside. We're going to skip the flying part.
Why? You have access to mages who can make you fly again.
I don't want to fly. Plus, we didn't hit the first bubble, if I remember correctly, from the flying part. We hit an eventual one.
Yeah, he just disappeared. Yeah.
The four of us just kind of come running into frame, and they chuck something at the Dacian, and just a purple bubble like encloses him, and then he just kind of sinks into the ground through like levers and magic. And that's when the other one like stands up and casts off their illusion and casts like fake magic at the team. Like a fake fight kind of like ensues where people are throwing around things and people are punching and hitting. And eventually Dacian, I don't remember who he was trying to finger of death.
At Laffian.
He casts some kind of like very fancy spell. And Squash kind of puts his hands up in that moment and the spell turns off. And in that one moment, the guy playing Dacian just kind of gives him like an evil look. This entire time, the character has been kind of having fun with the entire thing. And it was the one time, like, his fun was stopped. Like, oh, I was going to have fun with that fun. And in that moment, if I remember correctly, Raoul tail swiped a bubble into Dajin. I am not 100%, but that is the way Squash is going to tell it. That,
yeah, if I remember rightly, someone threw the bubble at Dajin. He teleported. Raoul caught it and then threw it back at him.
The whole time, she's almost in the web.
And let's say like Raoul tail swipes at the fake bubble thing that we're throwing around, and it hits Dajin. And in that moment, he just kind of looks around, puts his hands up. And you hear like the scream of an army as like illusionary skeletons start popping out of the cardboard mesh and start running towards the characters. And we roll Dajin off the stage.
Okay. All right.
Being followed by an illusionary skeleton army.
Oh, so you guys just jump off the front of the stage and then it goes into darkness.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Roll a performance at advantage for me, please.
All right, everybody. Don't get your hopes up that we're going to stick to this 20-plus bullshit you guys got going.
I had a 19. I rolled an 11.
Oh, 19, yeah. Yeah, let me see.
11.
I got a 12. No, wait. I got a 13. I accidentally clicked it twice.
A 13?
Yeah. Oh. That's a 13 on the dice.
Okay. What minor part of that performance doesn't go quite according to plan?
I want to say the part where Dajin doesn't get his spell across. He's supposed to look frustrated, and it's supposed to portray that like the only time he ever felt unhappy was when he didn't manage to kill, but it comes across comedic, so you get chuckles instead of oohs.
Okay. I've actually had that on stage where you try to do something really dramatic and people laugh and you're like, fuck you, man. All right. The stage shifts slightly and there is a kind of delicate looking tree and the ground itself turns into leaves and you can see that there is this golden light coming across. And we find that Zoltana and Odette are sitting on the branch of this tree. And we hear Odette and we hear Zoltana talking softly and gently to one another, talking about having met up with a father they'd never seen before, asking for opinions and help. And there is that very beautiful, touching moment as the music itself crescendos and lifts very high and then suddenly drops down very quietly as you hear Zoltana ask if Odette would renew their vows once the world has been saved. And there is a beautiful moment where it looks like they're kissing, but stage kissing, so there's no kissing involved. And then the lights and the music fade down. As it comes back up again, we find Aemir lying on a tomb. We see the shadow of a spectre standing tall over her. And we see Raoul, with his friends behind him, walking forward with a big bottle representing the sap that he managed to steal from the tree, handing over to the deity of death themselves, who bows low. And as Raoul leans over and stage kisses the Aemir laying on the tomb, she sits up and there is a small round of applause and the fluttering of golden leaves all around them. Squash is sitting on a boat. There is nothing around him except this kind of wooden barrier which is kind of up to his waist. And the Zoltana stands behind him and we see Squash throwing these small vials out into the ocean. And we hear him repeating three phrases that we've heard before. I will learn magic the right way. We will all be together at the end. I want a true chance to save Demi. Throws them out into the ocean. And there is a small fiery explosion. And we see Squash lift his hands and we see this fire balancing in the air as he manipulates, changes it and pulls it towards him, as he is now becoming more masterful of his magic. The stage goes clear. It's empty. There's darkness on it now, except for a single spot on Laffian, who is sitting cross-legged on the floor. And he has a single shaft of light on him, but it's broken up by what looks like bars. He's clearly in a prison. On the other side of the stage, there is
a woman, a tiefling. It is Kythea. And she is being helped across the stage by this drow man. It is evident that she's in some sort of tunnel, the way the light shifts, and she finally steps out. And she's standing in what looks like a beautiful forest. The two of them move around their lives. They are slowly making their way toward each other, but never meeting, just passing. Until the stage shakes, and they both fall to the floor. And as they kind of stand up, they see each other. It zooms in, that's a camera move. The light tightens around the pair of them. It's this kind of dark red, and you can see these little droplets of something in the air. And behind them you see, projected up on the back, what looks like Discora and Kino. And as they finally reach one another, you can see the continents interlock, and it forms a globe behind them as they embrace. And then it all turns to darkness.
Why was Discora on a globe? That's weird.
We're not doing this, Neil.
Stop it. Stop it, Neil.
Discord's already divided on this.
We lose the support of Cicero because they can hear, like, Rouse.
Rouse flat earth theory. Laffian. Final act. Bring us home, my friend.
Okay. Final act. Laffian uses his nomadic mind to have proficiency in performance, first of all.
Yep.
Throwing that out there.
That ain't gonna save you, boy.
You say that. That's a +5, bitch.
We have faith in you. Go for it.
That makes one of us. So remind me, V, we have access to, like, actors and, like, illusions and shit.
Basically, whatever you would want to appear on this stage will be on this stage. Like, there is enough magic around you. There is enough, like, wizards and ethereal beings that have access to illusions or even solid items. I do remember, actually, now I'm thinking about it, the final act had to include Sultana holding a cannon.
Yep, and shooting squash at the box.
That's the one. That was it. That was included in the finale. Yep.
That's
of,
the face,
like,
of regret
of
and remembering, and now we're regretting.
I don't even remember why we're shooting squash at the box.
Because they said they had a
dramatic
cannon.
Dramatic effect. Yeah.
You represent all of us or something.
Yeah, that's the
listen,
part. Like,
I specifically remember all trying to get you out of this.
But yes, you have access to whatever you need to make things look and feel as you want.
Okay. The scene opens with us, all of us, standing on the stage, our weapons drawn, standing ready for a big, big battle. And behind us, one after another, there's the appearance of these different armies, the armies of Kino, of Discora, the army of Savras. And then behind them appears the armies of Cicero, of Bellum, of the Stalking, which looks fucking terrifying because it's a bunch of fucking specters and God knows what else. And we're all ready and preparing for this battle, and then suddenly the room gets very dark and very cold. And what looks like a gigantic storm cloud seems to slowly take shape above the crowd, because everybody loves when the crowd gets to interact in a way. This dark cloud begins to swirl and coalesce. There's flashes of light and lightning as this cloud begins to grow and grow as it slowly encompasses all of the space above the crowd. Not enough that people in the boxes can't see what's going on below, but enough that everybody feels it. Do we have access to music? There's music, yeah.
Yes.
Like music. Yeah. Okay. A deep, like, bassy rumble begins to go in the background as we all stand ready, prepared to fight. And just when the fight is about to begin, the armies of Cicero, of Bellum, the stalking, fade out. And the rest of us all look really worried, very scared. But we fight anyways. The battle begins. This dark cloud, in a quick flash of movement, begins swooping down on the armies, on us. As we're trying to fight our way through, there are flashes of magic and psychic energy and swords and hammers and axes being swung left and right, arrows flying through the air. The battle is long. And one by one, slowly, everybody begins to fall around us, our friends, our comrades, those who have stood with us, until it's just us remaining. And then we all, in a last-ditch effort, come together and try to fight this off as one single cohesive... I don't want to say Voltron, because we're going to get in trouble. Formed units of friendship and magic. This is My Little Pony now. And with a last-ditch effort of giving it all our all to try to fight off this evil entity, Zoltana wields the gigantic cannon, and Squash scrambles inside, I assume.
You motherfuckers.
You did this to you, I remember it.
And with one last-ditch effort, we all throw our hands out. And Squash is launched at the dark entity upon us, which coincidentally happens to line up with the box where we assume this leader person is. And as the flash goes off from the cannon, and Squash goes flying through the air, as soon as he's about to hit the box, darkness.
Thud.
And then it's on. And then a very comical, cartoony style.
No.
And then the lights come back on. And it's Laughing standing on the stage. And he switches his focus onto being the leadership one so that he has a better persuasion skill. What you've just witnessed, what you've just seen, has not yet come to pass. And speaking for those who are present and those who will stand by us, we do not wish to have it so. If we do not have the support of Cicero, if we do not have the support of all realms that lie in peril, there is no standing against this dark being. This blissful eclipse. It is with that reason that we stand before you, putting on this performance, showing you what we have gone through, both past and present, and giving you a glimpse of what could be the future. But if you stand with us at that final hour, together we can hold back this darkness, and we will. We will be able to take this on. That is all dependent upon you, though. I would never dare to ask anybody to fight who did not wish to. But in this final moment, I am imploring you, fight with us. Not to help us, but to help yourselves, so that Cicero may continue to be as it is, instead of fading into what it was.
Hey everyone, it's V here. I want to say a thank you for this episode, really. I just wanted to give them something different to do, and they all did absolutely fantastically with it. I'm going to be upfront and honest, we did have to record this in two sections, which is why we sound a little bit confused towards the end about what we just decided. There was an emergency and we had to stop the episode like dead in the middle of recording, so it's a little bit cut into pieces, but hopefully at least it makes sense. Everyone did so well, I was so impressed with them, like top notch. Loved it a lot. This was a lot of fun to do and a lot of fun to plan. So yeah, that's all good. I want to say thank you to our newer patrons, to Addy. I want to say thank you to Werewindel and Ruth W. And also a thank you to one of our Ko-fi supporters, Craig. Thank you so much. We greatly appreciate all of you. However it is you feel like you can support us, we greatly appreciate it. And in fact, just all of you, really. Anyone listening still 179 episodes through, we really do appreciate it. Thank you. If you want to go check out our social media, you can find us basically everywhere at /TLDpod. It's run by a friend of ours named Lena. They're doing a fantastic job on it, and they've gotten everything sort of under control and on schedule again. So check out our social media, see what posts are going up, find out what we're doing, that kind of stuff. So yeah, enjoy that. And also, you're about to hear an ad from Don't Cast, Don't Tell, and you're about to hear that now.
Imagine a world where magic exists, but humans don't.
I think Raleigh's trying to follow along in the book for the lesson, but has to clean off the refried beans off of his numerology book.
Now imagine a magical school in that world that isn't influenced by a turf.
Nothing bad has ever happened in magic school.
Imagine that this school exists on an island where a goblin, a werewolf, and a fish girl work together to make a better world for themselves and others.
Toilet mimic.
Now imagine that this world exists in a podcast that releases every other Wednesday.
I think I'm kind of a princess, so, you know.
Are you?
I'm not, but, you know, I think I have that vibe.
Congratulations. You just imagine Don't Cast, Don't Tell, the first campaign in the Bone Rollers podcast. You can find it wherever you find podcast by searching for Bone Rollers starting February 2nd, 2022. And remember, being queer is magical.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.